seconds from game seven or from championship number six.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to season two of After the Last Dance. I'm your host, Alex Wong, and for each episode, I will be joined by my co-host, Russ Bankson. Before we get started, I wanted to give a shout out to the Soul Savvy team for giving Russ and I this platform to chat about Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls. Soul Savvy is a sneaker platform and community that provides you with the tools and resources you need to beat the bots to successfully purchase the products you want for retail. For more details, please check out soulsavvy.com. SOLESAVY.com.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the last dance of After the Last Dance. This would be episode 10 of season two. Hopefully there will be a season three. We're going to have to, talk to ownership and, you know, see what we can make happen. You know, we've gone 20-0, so I don't know what that means exactly. And I shouldn't claim 20-0 because we're only 19-0 right now. We have to get to the 20th. So with no further ado, we're going to talk this episode about the dance before the last dance, something that was touched on during the series, but, you know, wasn't covered quite as well as one would have liked in, you know, as far as what was up to that point, the greatest season in NBA history, the 72-10 Bulls of 1995-1996. And we're going to start that summer, shortly after the Bulls lost the Orlando Magic, and when Michael Jordan started filming Space Jam. And, you know, everyone gets perks when they do a movie of some sort, usually a trailer, apparently. I don't know much about these. I haven't starred in too many films. But Michael Jordan got a little bit more than that. Warner Brothers built him the Jordan Dome, an inflatable arena, basically, on the Warner Brothers set where he was filming Space Jam. And that's where we will pick up the story.
Yeah. Well, Russ, first of all, you know, after we go 20-0, I would say it's time for us to request a vacation to Vegas, a 48-hour vacation to Vegas. But I don't know if you...
You know, I don't know if I'm going to be ready to go to Vegas for another couple of years yet, given what's going on in the world and clearly how... unconcerned they seem to be about a lot of things, but we can discuss destinations. You know, I definitely like the idea of getting, you know, 48 hours or 48 days or, you know, some sort of trip somewhere.
Yeah, I think New Zealand is the only reasonable spot right now. So you mentioned the Jordan Dome, and it's funny, yeah. You know, imagine that being a request. You know, celebrities and actors have riders. You know, they might request specific foods, specific drinks. Imagine getting Michael Jordan's rider, and on the list, number one is built me an inflatable basketball court on the Warner Brothers studio lot, and they did. So while he was shooting Space Jam, you know, we know from The Last Dance that Michael's day-to-day schedule was he would shoot from 7 in the morning to 7 at night, I believe, and in between when he would have breaks, his trainer, Tim Grover, a.k.a. the man who knew the Utah pizza was bad, would come in and work him out. And then in the evening, NBA college players would drop by for these iconic pickup games. And based on several articles that's been written about it, some of the names that were there, because some of these guys were in the movie, and others dropped by: Patrick Ewing, Charles Oakley, Charles Barkley, Alonzo Mourning, Larry Johnson, Grant Hill, Rod Strickland, Glenn Rice, Dennis Rodman, Juwan Howard, Steve Smith, Cedric Sabalas, Reggie Miller, Magic Johnson, Tracy Murray, and a bunch of UCLA guys like Chris Johnson and Charles O'Bannon. This was a pretty star-studded list, Russ. He wasn't playing against scrubs.
No, and L.A., I think, was always sort of a summer basketball destination, you know, between Magic and Lakers. And, you know, I think UCLA was always a place for pickup runs. I believe, you know, guys like Reggie Miller would play at UCLA before he ended up even going there. You know, if you were a top high school kid in California, that would be where you'd go to really see where you stood up. And, you know, I feel like Michael Jordan sort of dropping down out of the sky in the middle of LA, you know, that just shifted the pickup games, you know, and instead of everyone going to the UCLA gym to run, they would go to the Jordan Dome and, you know, prove yourself against who was at that point, you know, the best player in the game. And well, maybe people weren't quite so sure about it after 95, but you know, where he was going to play his way into shape. And It's funny. I think we might have talked about this in one of our other episodes, but it's weird to me that, you know, that you see Dennis Rodman playing on that court. And the next season, the Bulls would sign him. And obviously, there was some question about it. And, you know, Phil Jackson talked about having to apologize and, you know, stand up when you come in. But it's like, well, the fact that he played with Michael Jordan that summer, you'd think that would be part of that story.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, aside from the novelty of the fact that, you know, these games are taking place on the Warner Brothers studio lot, like you mentioned, you know, Michael obviously had come back from baseball, you know, played a bit towards the end of the regular season the previous year, got knocked out by the Magic. Like, he needed this, right? Like, he needed this training regimen to kind of expedite the process of getting him back into basketball shape.
I think he needed it to get back into basketball shape, and I also think he needed it just in that, you know, quote-unquote competitiveness problem he had. You know, I'm sure, like, filming a movie on a green screen, you know, wasn't quite enough to quench the fires. And, you know, that's where I feel like it was probably worth it for Warner Brothers to build that stadium. Because if they didn't, he would have been probably commandeering a private jet to fly to Vegas every single night. And I'm sure they didn't want that.
No, that definitely would have happened. So in The Last Dance, when they touch on the Jordan Dome games, you see some archival footage. And the question has actually been asked to the director, Jason Hare, whether, you know, he had more footage that he didn't use. And he actually revealed in an interview that that was pretty much the extent of the footage that they had acquired. So there aren't full pickup games footages out there, you know, unless Don McLean, you know, brought his camcorder and secretly recorded them that we don't know about. So some stories that have come out about these games, Olden Polonese. Wow, I didn't know I would be saying his name in the year 2020. So in a story, I believe it was by Jay Adonde at ESPN about the Jordan Dome, he came to the pickup games and thought they were just going to be these chill, relaxed summer pickup runs. He says, quote, "It's the summertime. They're just going to be bullshitting." And then there's a pause. Come to find out, they weren't bullshitting. And we hear all these stories of competitive games. Chris Johnson, you know, told me several years ago, you know, when I did a story about these Bulls, he remembers Michael going at Cedric Ceballos. And he says, quote, "Michael is isolated against Cedric. He's palming the ball and gives him a bunch of jab fakes. And he tells him, 'Why are you wearing that number? Why are you wearing my number, man? You make my number look bad. Take that off.' Then boom, he dunks on Cedric and says, 'Take my number off. Don't ever wear my number again.'" Man, Michael was such an asshole.
MJ's trash talk must have just ruined people. Because, like, you're dealing with guys who probably grew up idolizing Jordan, had his posters on their wall. Ceballos was a guy who entered dunk contests. You know, he probably wore 23 because of Michael Jordan. And rather than Mike seeing it as a sign of utmost respect, as usual, Mike sees it as utmost disrespect because you're not as good as he is. And you know who was as good as he is? Nobody. It's just brutal. Like, it's amazing that number 23 hasn't been self-retired league-wide out of fear.
Tracy Murray remembers Michael listening to D'Angelo's first album that summer while they were hooping. You know, from The Last Dance, we know about Michael's music taste. You know, he listened to Kenny Lattimore, an advanced leak of Kenny Lattimore's album during the 98 finals. Tracy Murray definitely remembers just playing hoops, driving to the basket while Brown Sugar was blasting from the studio in the Jordan Dome. Is that a vibe, Russ?
That is a vibe. I 100% approve of D'Angelo being played during that. I don't know if, you know, it's funny, like, as New York shut down, you start to think about things that you experienced and, like, you know, sort of cherish them more. Like, I went to the Roots picnic when D'Angelo performed, and, like, that was, I mean, talk about a vibe. That was one of the more incredible things I've seen. You know, it's like D'Angelo, John Mayer, Questlove on drums. Like, the thing I'm trying to imagine is getting and this has to be something that happened. Imagine getting, like, eviscerated, both on the court and being trash talked by Michael Jordan to the strains of Anita Baker. Cause that would be something, you know, and just that idea of Mike, the scene of Mike getting on the bus, you know, getting vibed up or getting psyched up, listening to Kenny Lattimore. I know it's like a cliche and, you know, probably shouldn't be said by anyone ever, but I'm going to say it. Mike was different.
No, Mike was definitely different. Joe Pyka, the director of Space Jam, also remembers dropping in and playing a few games. I guess you can't say no if the director shows up on what is technically his set and wants to play a game. And he remembers Michael dunking over him. A few people remember, some back and forths between Michael Jordan and Don McLean, and also notably Michael and Grant Hill going back and forth one-on-one. Based on this list and the fact that there isn't a lot of footage of these games, what would you have loved to see, Russ?
I would have definitely loved to see Mike and Reggie Miller going back and forth, because there had to be a lot of things being said with those two, despite what Reggie said about having the whole Black Jesus thing that time. I can't imagine Reggie would have passed up moments to talk. I also would have loved to have been there the day Magic showed up, because obviously Magic and Mike had their history between the finals, the Dream Team, and while Magic clearly at some point relinquished the crown, I'm sure somewhere deep in his heart, he still believed he was the best. So there must have just been a lot happening. And Grant too, Grant, people forget, I feel like, but before Grant suffered that series of injuries, especially that broken ankle, Grant Hill was definitely the heir apparent. And people weren't wrong. Grant had a complete game. Grant in his young prime was basically a cross between Jordan and Pippen. So that would have been something to watch.
Yeah, there are some of us who really thought, the league would have belonged to Penny Hardaway and Grant Hill for 20 years. And unfortunately, that didn't happen. What you're saying, Russ, is that prime Grant Hill was a problem. I think that's how you should communicate
prime
it.
Prime Grant Hill was certainly a problem.
Yeah, he was a problem. Three fire emojis. Celebrities who dropped by during the Jordan Dome games included George Clooney, Halle Berry, Angela Bassett, Kurt Russell, Eric LaSalle, Steven Seagal, Mark Hamill, which Chris Johnson said called my man Luke Skywalker, Will Smith, Jada Pinkett, Bill Murray, Clint Eastwood, Kevin Costner, Damon Wayans, LL Cool J, and Queen Latifah. Man, that's an A-list courtside.
Are you surprised they didn't manage to get more of those people cameos in Space Jam?
Yeah, maybe they didn't want to be part of the movie, though.
Ooh, fair point. Right? I don't know, I'd love to hear people talk about that. But come on, man, you could have had a crazy celebrity row.
Yeah.
For the Monstars game.
Yeah, they could have had.
They got kidnapped.
Yeah, celebrities got kidnapped, like a bunch of celebrities at an Oscar party or something, right?
Right. Same aliens, and their talents got stolen too. And I'm trying to look at this list and figure out who didn't get their talent back. I don't want to get into that, though, I don't think.
Yeah, but if Mark Hamill is in it, then, it implies that Space Jam is part of the Star Wars universe.
And now, see, that makes it even more amazing. Because you'd have trouble figuring out explaining George Clooney and Eric LaSalle and how Space Jam is in the ER universe. But, I don't know. Obviously, Bill Murray was in Space Jam. You couldn't get Will Smith a cameo?
Once again, I'm going to say a lot of these actors, agents advise them to maybe not be part of the movie. So, the summer training is over, they filmed the movie. So the context for the Bulls heading into this season, as we mentioned, they had three-peated between 91 and 93. And of course, Michael took the 94 season off and the Bulls lost in the second round to the Knicks. Then Michael came back wearing the number 45 and they lost in the second round to Orlando. So they're 2 years removed from a championship and trying to start the dynasty again, or simply trying to win another championship. I don't think anybody could have expected that they were going to break the all-time regular season wins record going into the season. Right, Russ?
Yeah, probably no one outside of their own locker room. I think those guys fully expected to, and you look at the work those guys put in that summer, whether it was a continuation of the Breakfast Club or anything else, Scotty obviously was still sort of at that prime level that he had reached with Jordan out. But yeah, that's all hindsight. I think looking at it going into that season, there were still question marks. The 23 isn't 45. And it's like, what kind of shape is Jordan going to be in? Can he reclaim that pre-baseball level? And yes, he could.
Yeah, so the Bulls start off winning their first five games of the season. They would end up being 42-5. At the All-Star break. All these stats just seem ridiculous. At one point during the season, they won 31 out of 32 games. And during that stretch, they beat their opponents by an average margin of 14. 5.5 points. And this is one of the most incredible seasons to research, because if you go on Basketball Reference and look at their schedule, you can literally count their regular season losses with your two hands. 10 losses. Their first loss comes against Orlando in the sixth game of the season. So let's go through these losses, Russ. They lose at Orlando, 94-88. Their second loss comes at Seattle, 97-92. And those are two teams that they would, you know, face in the playoffs that season to win the championship. They lose to Indiana on the road, 103-97. That's their third loss. And in their only time of the season that they lost back-to-back games, they lost two road games, 105-99 at Denver, and then two nights later they lose by 10 points at Phoenix. And then there's a loss at Miami. At this point, keep in mind, they're undefeated at home. They lose at Miami 113-104. And then let's talk about this Knicks game, Russ.
These next two losses, I think, are the ones that sort of stick out for different reasons, but
yeah. So let's talk about this next one. They lose to the Knicks, 104-72 at Madison Square Garden, and this is Jeff Van Gundy's second game as Knicks head coach, and this is his first win as Knicks head coach.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Like, this is, you know, to put it in a little more context, this is after the Don Nelson experiment ended, which saw Nelly not only wanting to trade Patrick Ewing at one point, which clearly did not go over well with the Knicks brass, but also putting the hands in the ball of Anthony Mason, who was sort of the Paul Pressey 2000, you know, power forward slash guard, who kind of pounded the ball into the floor. And, you know, he was a very good all around player, but it sort of led to some discord. So promoting Jeff Van Gundy to head coach, who had been, you know, he'd been Pat Riley's disciple, it was sort of a return to the old ways and to that, you know, earlier 90s peak of the Knicks.
Yeah, and it's worth mentioning, too, that that is one of two losses all year by double digits for the Bulls. So they don't lose again until they play in Toronto, where they lose to the expansion franchise Toronto Raptors, 109-108. This is the Damon Sotomayor, Tracy Murray led squad, and this is the game where Steve Kerr misses a potential game-winning shot, at the buzzer, and actually Michael gets the rebound in the corner and hits this ridiculous, like, bank shot that goes in, but right after the buzzer. And this is, for Toronto Raptors fans, including myself, this is the only game that anyone remembers from that first expansion season.
The only other game I think I remember, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, was it the first game as a franchise they wore the Toronto Huskies jerseys against the Knicks, or was that not the first game?
This was the NBA 50th anniversary season.
Okay. So that was so the next season.
Yeah, it was the next season. So their first ever game was at the Sky Dome against the New Jersey Nets. Kenny Anderson. Ed O'Bannon, Derek Coleman led New Jersey Nets, and they won that game. Trivia, by the way, do you know who scored the first points for the Raptors?
Wow, I do not remember this.
Alvin Robertson.
Incredible.
Who was arrested for assault the night before. Cops came to his place, and I believe the GM or the PR of the Raptors had to post bail for him, something that people don't mention.
Now, this was the Isaiah Thomas-led Toronto Raptors, correct?
That is correct. Isaiah Thomas, who actually had a pretty decent run as a general manager in Toronto before going to New York and screwing all that up.
I mean, it's kind of incredible that, you know, the Bulls would have lost those games to Isaiah and Toronto and to the Knicks. You'd think those would have been very personal games, especially the fact that they lost that game to the Knicks by basically more points than they lost all their other games that season combined. I mean, not quite. That's exaggerating, but still close.
Yeah, and you know, head coach of the Raptors that beat Jordan and the Bulls, Brandon Malone, who is also part of the Bad Boy Pistons coaching staff and has been credited for coming up with the Jordan rules. So the loss to the Raptors is on the road, and they're still undefeated. So they don't lose. The Bulls don't lose their first home game until April 8th when they lose 98-97 to Charlotte. And this remarkably drops their record to 66-9.
Not bad.
Not bad. And I bet you, though, after they lost by like 32 to the Knicks, Michael was probably not easy to be around for like the next 6 weeks.
Ooh, Yeah, no. I can't imagine that night was very easy. I mean, in one of the recaps, they mentioned Phil Jackson, you know, briefly giving the Knicks credit and like running out of the gym. You know, I'm sure
they had just been swept or something. Like, what's going on?
It's just crazy to me that they lose that game, you know, by what is that? A ton, by 32. And then they lose three more games the rest of the way by a total of 3 points.
Yeah. So their last three losses, like you mentioned, of the season are by 1 point. You know, they lose to Charlotte. That's their first home loss. They lose again at home in the second last game of the season, 199 to the Pacers. And I know you had looked up the box score. You know, the main guys like Michael, Scotty, and Dennis, they played, but they played like 30 minutes, right?
Yeah, they were definitely easing minutes off. I mean, even the last game, which they won, the leading, like the guy who led the team in minutes that game was Judd Bushler, who played 30 minutes. Everyone else played 20-something. Judd, who managed 4 points in 30 minutes, which seems impossible. But, you know, the fact that you would actually still win that game, you know, that's kind of an indication of how good they really were at that point. I think Jordan played 24 minutes and scored 26 points. If you're scoring a point a minute, you're doing pretty good.
Yes. Well, on April 16th, the Bulls officially set the regular season wins record with their 70th win in Milwaukee, 86-80, which moves them to 70-9. They obviously finish the season 72-10. And, you know, towards the end of the year, Ron Harper and Scottie Pippen, I believe, are having lunch or having dinner after a game. And they talked about how 72-10 don't mean a thing without the ring. And this becomes one of the coolest T-shirts to be ever printed.
Yeah, I'm curious if – do you think Pat Riley trademarked that phrase too? Because, you know, I mean, he obviously
– he's the king of the trademarks, right?
He trademarked three-peat thinking the Lakers might do it, and they didn't. But that paid off, obviously, after other teams three-peated. So, you know, Pat definitely found a way to make his money. I'm going to say no because I think that's a little too obscure. I don't know if you really come up with that, especially since the record isn't – you know, 72-10 isn't – final until the season ends. So yeah, I mean, unfortunately the Warriors wish they didn't come up with that one because that later got thrown at them after the 73-9 season. But the Bulls were able to make it count.
Yeah, no, this is one of the coolest slogans at the time. So, you know, it goes without saying the Bulls enter the playoffs as heavy favorites to win the championship. And they live up to that reputation and cruise through the Eastern Conference. They sweep Miami in three games in the first round. They beat the Knicks in five games, 4-1 in the second round. And then they avenge the previous year's playoff loss to Shaq, Penny, Nick Anderson, and the Orlando Magic and Horace Grant by sweeping the Magic in the Eastern Conference Finals. And this is the last series for Shaq in Orlando. He goes to the Lakers that summer. And if you remember from The Last Dance, there's footage of Michael after the series at a post-game presser, remembering Nick Anderson's 45 doesn't look like 23 comment. This must have been, you know, one of the best kind of personal debts to settle for Michael, right?
Yeah, Mike obviously files all that stuff away. And, you know, as a note for Mitchell and Ness, I think when we do our That's When It Became Personal to Me jersey collection, obviously the Nick Anderson Magic jersey will have to be part of that. You know, it's also crazy, just a side note, like, that Shaq got swept as many times as he did. That's obviously a discussion for another time, but, you know, I find it hard to have someone call themselves the most dominant ever when you get swept out of multiple playoff series. You look at that Orlando team, and I think they had injury issues, and obviously, like, guys weren't necessarily getting along at that point, but you'd still think they would have been able to take a game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Shaq, and you know, you want to continue on that. I mean, Shaq got swept the year prior in the finals, right, to the Houston Rockets. And then when he goes to L.A., he gets swept by San Antonio and Utah. I want to say Utah and then San Antonio, I think, in that order, before Phil Jackson shows up and they go on their three-peat. So in the finals, the Bulls go up against the Seattle Supersonics. And, you know, I think everybody who watched The Last Dance is familiar with Michael Jordan looking at the iPad of Gary Payton's interview and laughing. But, you know, the documentary didn't get into context for this Sonics team. And they were coming into this finals, honestly, finally getting over the label as, you know, I don't know how else to put it, as a playoff choker. So let's run through the previous few seasons before they made this finals run. In 92-93, George Karl's first full season as head coach, the Sonics go 55-27 and come within one game of playing Jordan and the Bulls in the finals. They lose to Charles Barkley and the Suns in seven in the Western Conference Finals. They rebound the following season, 93-94, win 63 games, best team in the regular season in the West. But they lose in five games, 3-2, to the eight-seeded Denver Nuggets. You know, some of you will probably remember that is the iconic image of Dikembe Mutombo holding the ball, you know, rejoicing after that game. But do you remember anything about that series, Russ?
You know, that's the main thing I remember. Dikembe laying down, holding the ball, very excited. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously the Sonics were widely favored in that series. And, you know, Peyton and Kemp and like, actually, yeah, Peyton and Kemp. I mean, the 1-8 just seemed like something that wouldn't happen. But
I miss those days, though, the best of fives. You know, I still think, you know, the number one and the number two seeds are very heavily favored. But the best of five just adds so much more drama, right?
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I definitely miss the best of five first round series, you know, and at least like that way the lower seed having a little bit more of a chance. You know, I mean, upsets are fun, man.
Yeah. So the following season after that upset, the Sonics have another great regular season, 57-25. And again, they lose in the first round as a favorite. The Lakers beat them in four games, which takes us to this season, the 95-96 season. And once again, this is the third straight season now where they're just a, you know, a heavy favorite, I would say, or one of the favorites in the West. The Sonics go 64-18. And avoid losing in the first round for the third straight year. They beat Sacramento 3-1 in the first round. They sweep the Rockets in the second round. And then beat Karl Malone, John Stockton, and the Utah Jazz 4-3 in seven games in the Western Conference Finals. And, you know, aside from Gary Payton and Sean Kemp, key players on this team, the Sonics team, Detlef Schrempf, Hersey Hawkins, Sam Perkins, Vincent Askew, Nate McMillan, Eric Snow, Frank Borkowski, and Irvin Johnson. Not the Irvin Johnson that you know. You know, this is the if you know, you know. Yeah, this is the if you know, you know Irvin Johnson, Russ.
Here's a question for you. You know, the Sonics, you know, looking back at this, obviously they had great regular seasons under George Karl, and then they blow up twice in a row in the first round. I mean, is there even a remote chance that A, George Karl keeps his job, and B, that the core of that team is kept together even to get to 95-96?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. And I think, too, people forget just the pressure Payton and Kemp were under during this 95-96 season going into the playoffs, right? Like you want to talk about the Bulls going in 72-10 with the pressure. Like, the Sonics had pressure just to get out of the first round.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, at that point, I guess, the pressure's off a little bit when you actually make the finals because, like, you know, clearly you're fighting the demons of having lost to the Nuggets and, you know, then losing to the Lakers. Like, getting out of the first round was the big battle. So, you know, getting as far as they did, but again, like, you get to the finals, you're like, well, hell, now we should win it. Obviously, there was some thought of blowing it up because, you know, one thing that got addressed during the Last Dance was, you know, the fact that Scottie Pippen could have been traded for Sean Kemp in a package. Like, you know, so obviously there was some thought for the Sonics of changing their core pretty dramatically. You know, you would imagine if that trade had been discussed that there might have been other trades that got discussed somewhere along the line. But, you know, fortunately, cooler heads prevailed. They kept Karl around. They kept Kemp and Peyton together. And by then it starts clicking, you know, and I think you have a bunch of guys on that team. If you look at those, that roster, you know, especially guys like Perkins and Detlef Schrempf, like who I think would fit pretty seamlessly into the modern game. You know, Seattle had a bunch of, you know, guys who played both ends of the floor, could play inside and out. Like, they were dangerous.
Yeah, and, you know, Gary Payton and Sean Kemp were two of the most fun players to watch. I mean, they were just cool. And you know, add to their jerseys too, right? The 95-96 jerseys. Those are some of my favorites.
And then also, like, when I don't think we're going to get too in-depth on it because I'd have to crib notes for it, but everyone should check out Mike Prada's newsletter, which I'm totally spacing on the name of, but you can find Mike Prada on Twitter. He wrote something about that Seattle Supersonics team and their defense and how it kind of preceded a lot of modern defenses into how it worked. And, you know, I think he posited that even their playoff failures were part of that, because they would come in and blitz you if you were playing a single game against them, but in a longer series, you could kind of figure it out.
Yeah, so no, definitely check out Mike Prater's newsletter. It's always an excellent read. So the main storyline in The Last Dance was Gary Payton doesn't guard Michael Jordan until the Sonics lose the first three games and they're facing elimination. They're down 3-0. So I just want to give a little bit more context to this than what the documentary touched on.
The documentary's context was, and I quote, "I had no problem with the glove."
Which I still have a problem with, because we all know Gary Payton was one of the best defensive players of his era and probably of all time. So one thing that's not mentioned is that backup guard Nate McMillan, you know, was dealing with an injury heading into the finals. He plays 8 minutes, 6 minutes in game one, and then misses the next two games with a lower back injury. And, you know, Gary Payton was dealing with a calf injury at the time. And that's one of the reasons, one of the main reasons why George Karl didn't want to, you know, exhaust him on the defensive end by putting him on Jordan. But without McMillan as well, you know, Karl didn't really have a good backup option. And Nate McMillan said this, quote, "I worked my whole career to get to the finals and win a championship. It was frustrating because a lot of people don't even get that opportunity. That's when you want to be healthy. And I couldn't play." And Sean Kemp said, quote, "We made some mistakes at the start of the series. We put Detlef on Michael, which was not a good idea. I don't know what we were thinking with that one." Yeah, Detlef Schrempf, probably not the best option, even though I know George Karl was missing a few guys, well, in terms of how healthy they were with Gary and Nate.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, and again, it's hindsight, but it's kind of crazy that you don't put GP on Jordan from the start. You know, I understand, like, you need your offense to work, but Payton was always a better defensive player than he was an offensive player. So you would think you would want to maximize your best player's strengths, especially when doing that offsets the opposing best player's strengths. You know, even if they had started with Payton off Jordan, you'd think you would switch him onto Jordan when you're down 0-2. Because if you do when you're down 0-3, it's too late. No one's coming back from 3-0. I mean, I think a team came back from 3-1 in the finals, if I remember correctly. I'm not sure. I think I heard something about that. But
yeah, you know, I think that's why The Last Dance happened, Russ.
That is very true. But I mean, you're looking at a Bulls team that, as we pointed out earlier, they lost back-to-back games once during the regular season. So I mean, you put yourself in a 3-0 hole, it's over. You put yourself in a 2-0 hole, it's probably over. But you know, you come back home to Seattle, man, I mean, I'm sure GP wanted to guard Michael from the very start. You throw him on him in game three and maybe things change a little bit.
Yeah, and I mean, the combination of the fact, like you mentioned, you're going up against a team that won 72 games and only lost back-to-back games once. And also the fact that you don't know if you're ever going to get a chance to, you know, be in the NBA Finals again, right? And in this case, at least for this version, you know, Gary Payton and Sean Kemp and the Sonics never make it back. So in The Last Dance, like we mentioned, Michael laughs off Gary Payton's, you know, interview talking about how he gave Michael trouble once, you know, he became the primary defender. So just want to go through some of the stats here to maybe debunk this a little bit. So game four, the first game that Payton is the primary defender on MJ, Michael shoots 6 for 19. In game five, he has a pretty good game, 11 for 22, 26 points. But even in the clinching game six, when the Bulls won pretty comfortably, Michael shoots 5 for 19 and has 22 points. He does add 9 rebounds, 7 assists, and 2 steals. And, you know, this isn't obviously a deep dive, but just looking at those numbers, you can say that Gary Payton obviously made a difference.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's insane to say he didn't. You know, like, that game ends up going – that series ends up going 6 when it looked like it was going to be over. You know, you go back to even that first – scene in After the Last Dance about the series and Bob Costas basically writing the Sonics obituary before they even tip off game one. You know, I think everyone thought, especially with the Bulls only having lost one game, you know, in the playoffs. I mean, that's the insane thing to me. If you look at that, they went into the NBA Finals having lost 11 games the entire year, including the playoffs. Like, that's absurd. I mean, they seemed completely untouchable. And, you know, for the Sonics to come back and take two games off of them and make it, you know, if not a series, at least make it very interesting, far more interesting, I'm sure, than the Bulls wanted it to be. You know, that alone stands as an accomplishment.
Yeah, and, you know, the Sonics have to be, you know, kicking themselves and probably still questioning the whole Gary Payne decision, because if it, you know, if the series is 1-1 or 2-1, who knows? You know, it could have gone to a seventh game. Of course, it doesn't. You know, Michael wins his fourth championship on Father's Day. The Bulls clinch at home in game six. So I guess the question is, do we agree that this is the best Bulls team before we even talk about all-time teams?
I mean, I go in different directions. You know, in the one way, of course it is, because they obviously had the best record. They ran through the East in the playoffs. They had the brief hiccup against Seattle, but, you know, obviously won out. You know, I think you could almost make a case that one of those teams from the first three-peat would be better. But again, like, if you're just looking at numbers, you know, I think you have to go with the 96 team. Everything just came together.
And it's interesting. I know we're chatting about this. So the following season, the Bulls win 69 games in the regular season, and they could have gone to 70, except the Knicks beat them on the final game of the season. And I feel like it's not a small thing that, you know, if the Bulls had won 70 games in back-to-back seasons, maybe they get, those two teams get talked about differently too, right?
Yeah, I mean, just the fact that they were right there and, you know, had the chance to do it, you know, I think, like, I don't recall. It's funny, like, and I feel like I'm saying that a lot, and I should probably get my brain checked out. But, you know, I was at that game. That was the first game I ever went to at the United Center. And I think, like, oh, man, I'm going to see the Bulls win their 70th game. And they didn't. And, you know, whatever. I mean, I think, like, down the stretch, you're obviously starting to think about the playoffs. You're probably not worried about playing guys way too much just to get a win that, in the grand scheme of things, doesn't matter. You know, I think if you look back at it historically, it's certainly more important. Although, you know, I guess 69 wins is pretty nice.
We're really catering to our younger audience. As
audio memes. That's going to be our new thing. If the Mitchell Ness jersey thing doesn't happen, we'll just be Audio Meme Incorporated, which, by the way, Pat Riley probably just trademarked.
He just did. You know, assistant coach Jim Clements said recently in an interview that if the 72-win Bulls knew that their record would be broken, which it was in 2016, like you referenced earlier by the Golden State Warriors, they went 73-9. Jim Clements said if they knew that there was going to be, you know, any team that was going to come along and break their record, they would have gone for 75-plus wins just to be safe. And I know we're kind of cherry-picking here and only looking at the losses. I'm sure there are wins where they, you know, kind of pulled it out in the final seconds or might have gone lucky. But, man, they four losses were within 6 points. And, you know, like we mentioned, their last three losses were by 1 point, and they lost two games all year in the regular season by double digits. I don't think it's unrealistic to say that, you know, this team really realistically could have gone, like, 77-5.
I mean, look, if the ball drops another way, sure. But at the same time, like, you know, I'm looking at this as, like, this was Jordan's vengeance season. This was, like, this was his, you know, that's when it became personal for me writ large, like, over the entire 82. You know, I think I respect what Jim Clemens said, and Jim Clemens was obviously in that locker room. But I think it's insane to think even that there were games that Jordan was like, yeah, we don't really need this one. Or, like, when it came down the stretch, it's like, eh. We don't need to put in that extra effort to win. You know, I think he wanted to win. I think he wanted to go 82-0. So, you know, I think you can argue if the ball bounces a different way once or twice, obviously, because there were those, you know, series of one-point losses, things go different. You know, I find it hard to believe that it was a matter of just desire. I don't think there was ever a moment with that team where they took their foot off the gas being like, nah, we don't need to win this one. Especially because when the 70th win came, you know, they didn't win the 70th game until awfully late in the season. You know, it's not like they were 70-5 and then coasted their way to the end. And yeah, you look at that last loss. Yeah, it's a one-point loss. It's to Indiana. You know, Jordan and Pippen only played like 25 minutes each. But again, like, you're heading off into the playoffs. And the fact that they only lost one game in the Eastern Conference playoffs shows that they obviously had the right approach. You, at some point, you need to give the guys a little bit of a blow.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. And, you know, it's always fascinating with the comparisons to the 73-win Warriors team, because you know, the fact that they didn't win in the NBA Finals and they didn't complete the job like the 72-win Bulls did casts them in a different light, right? Like, I feel like people talk about the 73-win Warriors and it always starts with them blowing that 3-1 lead in the Finals. And, I mean, the other thing is the Warriors clinch got that 73rd win on the last night of the regular season, and it just happened to run right up against Kobe's final game.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, you can also look at that as sort of the what could have happened, where it's like you talk about them, the Bulls going for 75 wins. I mean, the fact that the Warriors did go for it might have ended up hurting them in the end. You know, it's like they had to stretch guys kind of beyond their breaking point to win that many games and to run guys that many minutes. And, you know, they unfortunately paid the price for it.
Yeah. So anything else you wanted to add about Jordan Dome, 72 win Bulls, Russ?
I mean, I guess all I do want to say, and like, you know, obviously GP got his chance to speak in the doc. So, you know, despite Michael Jordan sort of laughing it off, you know, I don't believe Mike really felt that way. You know, I think he had to say it. And maybe now, you know, years later, maybe he's convinced himself of it. But, you know, I think Gary Payton does deserve a lot of credit for the Sonics winning those two games. Because, you know, forget the Jim Clemens thing about them winning 75. You know, I think they wanted to end that finals in a sweep. You know, I think they wanted to close out as, you know, inarguably the best team ever. So the fact that Payton was able to come in and sort of break that up just with the way he played Jordan and the way he disrupted things, you know, like, I think he does deserve more credit. To me, GP in 96 was the equivalent of Allen Iverson in 2001 coming in and dropping 48 on the Lakers in that first game. You know, that was a sort of a similar situation where the Lakers swept the West, you know, and they come in and you figure like, oh man, they're going to destroy the Sixers. Like, and Allen Iverson was like, no, you're not. And I mean, unfortunately, it was sort of a, you know, a last gasp defense. It was like 300, but playing basketball. But, you know, I think GP deserves that same credit.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point and, you know, a good spot for us to wrap this episode on. So, you know, just want to thank everyone again for listening. This was our final episode for season 2 of After the Last Dance. Russ and I are now going to enter intense negotiations with management for a season 3. I just want Scottie Pippen's 91 contract. That's all I'm asking for. I'm just putting that out there. I know, Russ, you're going to be like Shaq in that, what was that, preseason game in Hawaii, just screaming at Jerry Buss to, you know, to pay him.
Look, man, I'm older. I'm going to be asking for that Michael Jordan 96 contract. I need to go like 1 year and like, you know, we got to make up for you know, being below market. You know, got to negotiate directly with ownership. I don't know. Maybe fly out to Montana.
It's either this or we print Michael Jordan posters that say, you miss every bad pizza that you don't eat. I've been thinking about that for weeks. Mitchell and Ness, again, if you want to give me a show, let's make it happen. But that does it for us for this episode and this season. And, you know, want to thank you, everyone, again, for listening. And as always, if you want to find past episodes of After the Last Dance, they are available on iTunes, Spotify, or any other podcast platforms that you use. Want to thank Soul Savvy again for giving Russ and I an opportunity to record these 20 episodes. And stay tuned, you know, whether it's season 3 or something else, you know, Russ and I are going to go back in the quote-unquote lab, and we'll figure it out, and we'll be back.
Yeah, and I also wanted to say thank you to Soul Savvy for giving us this platform. It's definitely been a blast through these 20 episodes. You know, hopefully we get to do a little bit more. I think we're sort of discovering that, you know, the more you dig into that Bulls championship run, the more storylines you find. You know, I think we could easily probably do another series or 8. You know, hopefully our PER numbers are good enough to do that. Our value over replacement podcast is hopefully strong. Otherwise, we'll just have to go into that audio meme business, and I don't think any of you want that. And speaking of that, also, thank you guys for listening. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, and just hit us on iTunes with a 5-star review and leave a comment. Just say Prime After the Last Dance was a problem with 3 fire emojis. That would be much appreciated. Thank you, everyone.
The sneaker game is tough if you're in it alone. Getting the latest pair of hype sneakers is becoming increasingly difficult these days. As soon as you try to purchase, the shoe is out of stock. If you want to improve your skills, you need to learn the tricks of the trade. Be smart and get equipped with the right tools and information you need to help you cop the sneakers you want. Soul Savvy, the exclusive sneaker community.